The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
In the social justice system, words are considered violence. In New York City, the dedicated detectives who investigate these vicious attacks are members of an elite squad known as the Microaggression Victims Unit. These are their stories.
This is where it happened.
Yeah, right here. This morning. It just happened so fast. I was right here walking through the warehouse. And then and Dave comes in. And he goes. Hi, Kenny. I'm not Kenny, I'm Kendrick. Kenny's the other black guy at the office. I'm not talking without a lawyer.
Yeah, I don't think you understand who we are. We're the MVU.
Microaggressions Victim Unit. Social justice, not criminal justice.
Means you don't have any rights. No trial, no lawyer, just us. And right now, you're looking at 15 to life.
What?
15 years cancellation minimum. First it'll be a Twitter mob, then your friends will stop talking to you, and then you'll be fired, and no one will ever hire you again.
Look, I have kids.
Oh, don't worry about your kids. We'll take care of your kids. We'll put them in a program. Well, they'll be loved, fed puberty blockers, taught about the sex habits of their teachers, and assuming they're white, told just how racist they really are.
Fine. I called him Kenny.
Got him.
It doesn't matter that he was black. I confuse people's names all the time. It has nothing to do with race.
So you're saying you don't see race?
Because that's a microaggression.
No.
So you do see race?
Because that's a microaggression.
Look, I mix up my kids all the time. I'm always getting the boys confused.
Now you're calling him boy?
That's beyond microaggression into microassault. That's a completely different unit. Book him.
What?
Yeah, it looks like we got a 1738 in progress.
Non-binary getting misgendered at a Starbucks?
You're learning, toots.
Toots? That's a 2516. Felony sexism!
Sorry that happened to you, man. There's no place for that here. And Mike's a real jerk.
You mean Dave?
Yeah, I always get my whites mixed.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, September 28th, 2023. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
The Million March for Children that kicked off a week ago today was, in every respect, and despite some of my own criticisms that you might hear me make today, a resounding success for the right. But let me be clear from the outset. As I maintained last week, there is no such thing as a 2SLGBTQIA+ quote-unquote community. It is an utter fabrication and fiction to its very core. It doesn't exist. Don't fall for it. It's so stupid that even those acknowledging it are openly calling it the alphabet soup community. To continue treating it like a thing, and to continue reacting to this fictional community narrative as if it were a real constituency, is playing to the left's game. The invention of this imaginary community is part of an explicit Marxist agenda, which, as we heard on last week's show from Thomas Sowell, has been understood and written about many decades ago, and which is now still hidden from public view by its own tactical distraction of the BS community. Worse, those who believe themselves to be part of this fictional community are in serious need of help, since for the most part they are mentally ill and are themselves the victims of trauma and abuse, both physically and mentally. To call this dysfunction a lifestyle is criminal and is an expression of utter contempt and hatred for these damaged souls. That's just part of what we'll be learning about today, right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because, as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. And on that note, got this great feedback over the past week from listener J.H., who wrote, and I quote, "Been listening to you guys since about 2012, 2013. Was a fan when I lived in London, England. Still a fan in Perth, West Australia. I've been a policeman since 2007. The show's ideas and philosophy has had a profound influence on how I police. I look forward to the show every Thursday. Keep up the good work. I'll try to throw a few pennies your way next payday." End quote. And I wrote back to him, I said, "Hello, Jay, we love the pennies, but your words are worth $1 million. Thank you for the wonderful testimonial. It's great to learn how our show has been influencing our listeners." Got this one from Troy K., who wrote, quote, "All I can say is congratulations for getting me boiling so quickly this morning. Once again, the topic resonates so strongly. How anyone is swayed by their simplistic argument is terrifying," end quote. Well, our apologies for getting your blood pressure up first thing in the morning, Troy, but terrifying is the right word for it, especially when you consider that these people are not only swayed by these simplistic arguments, but are actually promoting them. And of course, that propaganda campaign begins right at the top with the likes of Justin Trudeau, as described here in the September 20th X-22 report.
Now, the other thing that's very interesting is around the world, the parents and people, they're out there telling them, telling the governments, telling all these trans people and all the rest to leave the kids alone. Out in Canada, we had this huge parade. People are coming together at Parliament Hill for the 1 million march for children. And we had Trudeau out there, and he actually sent a message on X and said the following: "Let me make one thing very clear. Transphobia, homophobia, and biphobia have no place in this country. We strongly condemn this hate and its manifestation, and we stand united in support of the 2S LGBTQI plus whatever the other letters are. Canadians across the country, you are valid and you are valued." So the people of his country are saying, "We don't want you going after our children." And he's saying, "We support these people." I mean, really think about this for a second. This is going to backfire on him in the end, because when the people start to see what's really going on and they start to wake up and they see their economy breaking down and they can't live there and they see what's going on in their country, this is when people push back, and they push back hard. We've seen it throughout history, and it's happening right now.
Yes, and that pushback goes in two directions, as witnessed this article from the Toronto Star, September 20th, accompanied with the headline, "Whitby Mayor Elizabeth Roy Blasts 1 Million March for Children Protest at Durham District School Board Office," with the subheading, "I am alarmed by the increasingly harmful anti-2S LGBTQIA plus rhetoric that is being directed towards our schools." Written by Tim Kelly for Whitby This Week, and I quote, "Whitby Mayor Elizabeth Roy has come out strongly against the 1 million march for children, against gender and sexual diversity in schools, which was held on September 20th in Whitby at the Durham District School Board headquarters on Taunton Road. Protesters were planned across the country, but Roy said, with respect to the 1 million March for Children events taking place across Canada today, including protests in Whitby, I want to make it clear that the town of Whitby is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion for all residents. This includes supporting our 2SLGBTQIA plus communities and addressing the unique challenges they face." Roy, who served as a school board trustee and board chair in the 1990s and early 2000s, said she's alarmed by the increasingly harmful anti-2SBS rhetoric that is being directed towards our schools. Well, I've got to stop here for a sec. That's not possible, because there never has been any such rhetoric, especially against a supposed community that no one even knows about or can define. The article continues. She added that she commends the Durham District School Board and all school boards in Ontario that are working to ensure safe spaces for 2SLGBTQIA+ students and staff. Today's protests claim to support the rights of children, but in fact they do the opposite, she says. Well, actually, in the first place, children do not have rights. Their parents do. And secondly, those supporting the non-existent rights of children are the very people who are mutilating and disfiguring both the minds and bodies of those children, the Marxists hiding behind their fake community labels. The article continues, though. In June of each year, the town of Whitby raises the rainbow flag at Town Hall to proclaim Pride Month and to recognize the challenges and celebrate the history, courage, diversity, and contributions of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, questioning, and two-spirit communities. The town of Whitby says it is officially committed to addressing the unique challenges still facing the 2SLGBTQIA+ communities to build a more inclusive and equitable town. End quote. Keep that commitment in mind when you hear just exactly what the town of Whitby is supporting. And of course, Roy served as a trustee and board chair, which makes sense. But the article continues. Roy added in her Wednesday statement that the 1 Million March for Children campaign attacks inclusive education that benefits all students and fosters environments where the 2SLGBTQIA+ children and youth are more likely to be bullied or marginalized, end quote. And this is amazing to have this printed. Quote, she added that the rates of suicide and self-harm are higher for students in the 2SLGBTQIA+ community, and in some cases, school is the only safe place for them. End quote. Well, talk about putting the innocent sheep right in the midst of the wolves. And then she concludes by saying, I respect the right to peaceful protest. However, events that specifically target the 2SLGBTQIA+ community have no place in our town. End quote. And what a piece of unadulterated pure hatred and bull excrement. Whitby Mayor Elizabeth Roy might as well have admitted to the advocacy of open child abuse, in addition to acting as an agent for Marxism, which she is, wittingly or not. And to explain why this is the case, on this side of our upcoming bumper break, from the September 21st edition of the John Henry Weston Show, in conversation with author Teresa Moll about the woke culture, which I have described as the acronym for a worldwide organized killing effort. While on the return side of the bumper, from the Ottawa protests on September 20th, Dr. Anne Gillies speaking to the crowd about some inconvenient truths about gender and sexual dysphoria and its causes.
In the book, I provide the definition of woke as a socio-political ideology that's characterized by the manipulation of noble goals for the destruction and control of society by radical left-wing zealots. That's a long way of saying that it's essentially a form of evil. There's nothing really new about wokeness and what they're trying to accomplish. It's just they have some updated terminology, and I think it's purposely confusing, vague, and misleading, because that's how the enemy sees an easier way to capture people. They use these nice terms like diversity and equity and inclusion, all these things that sound good, but they're smoke screens for a pretty sinister scheme. So once you recognize what wokeness is that it's a form of evil, and then it's a form of radical radicalism. You can recognize what it is and defeat it.
It's interesting what you say, that it starts with noble goals. I like that you started there, because it's too weird to think that most of the world is sucked in by something that doesn't appear good. What are some of the noble goals that they propose?
Right. So everybody wants a world that is welcoming and diverse in theory. We want people to love one another and to be happy, quote unquote. So you look at the LGBT movement, and that's all rainbows, cheerful colors, parades, just simple love. They make it so simple and nice sounding. But whenever you look at what the fruits of the woke movement are, all of them are rotten. They put on these wishy-washy, nice sounding terms, and then they even veil them further by making them into these quick little letters, DEI, ESG, these sorts of things that make it even more difficult to see what they really are and what they really mean. They're not even saying the words out loud anymore. And then they become smoke screens. And what they actually accomplish is not love. You know, you look at what the LGBT movement brings about for these people. Physically, what it manifests is something like 3 times the rate of depression and anxiety among the transgender community. It's 6 times likelihood of being diagnosed with depression and 6 times more likely to attempt to commit suicide. So you can say that it's happy and love is love and have all these cheerful colors all you want and have parades for this kind of lifestyle, but what it brings about is really destructive, and it truly is the culture of death.
All right, I'd like to introduce now Reverend Dr. Ann E. Gillies. And Dr. Gillies is trained jointly in psychology and theology, and she retired from private practice after 25 years of clinical counseling, focused primarily on individuals struggling with complex traumatic stress because of chronic childhood sexual abuse. Her research is in a child and adult attachment, trauma, same-sex attraction, gender dysphoria, and the current transgender phenomena and conversion therapy. She is the author of several books, including Closing the Floodgates, Setting the Record Straight on Gender and Sexuality, and Ultimate Deception, The Truth of Gender Affirming Care. Reverend Dr. Gillies.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I've been impacted by the LGBTQ community for 40 years, and I have a lot to say. It doesn't mean I don't care about them. I absolutely do. But I want to tell you, there's corruption in every area of society, and they don't acknowledge some of the things that happen within the community. I want to speak to those who also have been sexually abused, but I was married to a man, I found out later, who was homosexual, and he sexually abused our children. That's what Damaged by the Predators Among Us is about. It's talking about the reality that happens. And we want to take care of those who are abused. In 2020, the American Journal of Psychiatry said this: there is no evidence hormones or surgery help gender incongruent patients. Did you hear that? Listen, they're feeding you a bunch of lies. Listen to this again. The American Journal of Psychiatry has said there is no evidence that hormones or surgery help gender incongruent patients. That's sexually confused children. You don't put them on puberty blockers. You don't put them on hormones. They don't need to be mutilating their body because it doesn't help them. And I want to say to you parents who have been caught up in this web, because my heart goes out to you parents and grandparents who have this happening in your family, and you are pressured into affirming the delusion they are taught to believe. I want to say to you, so my latest book came out last week called Ultimate Deception, The Truth of Gender Affirming Care. It's a research I've been researching this for years and years. But our parents have been coerced into agreeing with this garbage. There is no scientific background for this. It's made up, it's biased research, it's methodologically skewed. And yet, that's what the politicians are listening to. So I want to say a couple more things. Just a couple. Gender dysphoria is a form of psychological distress. Okay, let me put it more clearly. These children have some mental things going on. They're distressed. They need to be cared for. We're not against the children. We need to care for them. But most of these children suffer from multiple pre-existing mental illness conditions. And our psychologists and our psychiatrists and our counselors refuse to treat them because Bill C-4, and I'll tell you, I felt sick to my stomach when I saw what our conservative did in the House when it was passed. But I want to tell you, the real conversion therapy that's happening is in our schools. This is corruption. They are converting our children to an LGBTQ religion. We want it stopped. No more. Do you know, here's another stat for you. In 2014, 0.6% of individuals had gender identity disorder. 0.6%. In 2021, it's as high as 1 in every 100 children between 6 and 17 years old. This is a social contagion, and it is funded by Big Pharma. Affirming a child's misguided sense of self runs the risk of neglecting the pre-existing mental health issues and setting them up for a life, a whole life of damage to their bodies and to their minds, all in the hope that they can be something other than what they actually are. We need to affirm their God-given identity as male and female, and we need to say to them, we love you the way you are, and if you have some other things going on, we're going to help you with that. You know, these vulnerable children, 48% of these children who are transitioning, 48% are on the autism spectrum. This is horrendous. And that's the newest research out. I had never seen that high of a stat until about 2 months ago. But we need to protect these children at all costs. Vulnerable children like these are especially susceptible to pedophiles. And pedophiles are out there. Pedophilia almost made it through the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It was almost removed in 2014. There is a push to decriminalize, and you know this, pedophilia. It has been happening for years, and it's academia, it's psychologists and psychiatrists that are pushing for it. We need to hold them accountable.
Thank you, Dr. Gillis. Thank you so much.
For those of you who may have some misgivings about what is being taught in state-funded public schools in the name of inclusive education, include this in your basic archive of evil. Here are some of the definitions being taught to very young kids in an effort to completely destroy their minds. So this is from an actual dictionary of gender terms that they're teaching the kids, and it's one of those books that's being complained about in the schools. It comes with illustrations, but get a load of some of these definitions given in alphabetic order. I'll try to get through as many as I can before I get sick. So the letter A is for agender. Someone who does not identify with any gender at all, also known as gender neutral. So a dead person, for example. B is for bigender. Someone who identifies as being male and female at the same time. Well, that's mentally ill, of course, but it's also a metaphysical impossibility. C is for cisgender. Someone who identifies their gender with the sex they were assigned at birth. Wow. Assigned by whom? D is for demigender. Someone who identifies only partly with a gender. A demi-boy or a demi-girl. Now, I want to know, if only partly gender, what's the part that's not a gender? E is for endogender. Someone whose gender fluctuates but is always partly male, an endo-boy, or female, an endo-girl, or other, endogender. I mean, that is too stupid to even try to respond to. This is mental illness on display. F is for femme, someone who expresses a feminine gender identity. But of course, there's no definition for feminine in this gender dictionary, so there's no way to know what this means. G is for gender fluid, someone who does not identify with one single gender and fluctuates between different ones. Wow. You know, I think a better definition for gender fluid would be something like female semen or blood discharge from a male having his period. You know, gender fluid. That actually makes a lot more sense than fluctuating pulses of identity do. H is for horogender, someone whose gender identity changes over time. Wow, kind of sounds like climate change over time, doesn't it? Except it's not the gender that changes, it's the identity of the someone who's no longer a someone but a somewhat. I is for intersex, not to be confused with intersectional, another Marxist term referring to the various and numerous ways that they are attacking the human species all at once. Someone who is born with a body type that does not fit the typical definitions of male or female. And what I want to know is, what typical definitions of male and female could they be talking about? There are no typical definitions in a definition-fluid state of epistemology. It's ridiculous. Here's a weird one. Juxera, J-U-X-E-R-A. Someone whose gender identity feels feminine, but not entirely female. This sentence, first of all, is grammatically incorrect, even though intellectually it's totally insane. Feminine and female are not compatible categories. One refers to behavior, the other refers to identity. But of course, that doesn't matter to these brilliant educators. K is for kinigender, K-Y-N-I-G-E-N-D-E-R. Wow. Someone who's unable to pinpoint their gender due to the stress of the questioning process. Well, you know, given the insane make-believe definitions being used, it's easy to see where that stress comes from. L is for Libra gender, someone who is mostly agender but has strong connection to a different gender. So this person is a walking contradiction. He doesn't identify with the gender he identifies with. Interesting. Oh, here's a word we never hear about. Man, and then in brackets, or boy. Someone who identifies as male. Well, of course, this is demonstrably incorrect. The determinant factor in this is whether the individual in question has a penis, irrespective of his mental programming or dysfunction. N is for non-binary, someone who does not identify with the two binary genders of male and female, and yet is still identified in contrast to these binary genders because reality demands it, of course. O is for off-gender, someone whose gender feels very similar to another gender. Well, there's certainly something off about that. Wow, these are so contradictory. How can you even say these sentences? P is for pangender, someone who identifies with more than one gender at the same time. And just how many might that be? I mean, okay, I'm at my sick point. These are joke definitions best written for a board game of silly word creations.
Julie, you go first.
7.
Simon?
2.
46.
8.
1.5.
Nope, none of those are number, Wang.
50?
No.
9?
Naught?
No.
1,000,000?
No.
Infinity?
No.
Infinity and a half?
You can't have infinity and a half.
5.
Simon?
6.2785.
No.
1.5.
You've already said that.
Vase.
That's not a number, Julie.
I can't think of any more numbers.
Can you imagine our kids having their heads filled with concepts like this? They couldn't possibly function in the real world. That is the very thing that makes them mentally ill. None of these concepts or definitions come close to defining anything in reality, so they will always find themselves in utter fear of and in conflict with reality. Like any computer that no longer functions because of corrupted files or programming, these people have also become corrupted by corrupted files in the form of fake definitions and concepts literally calculated to destroy their minds. The definitions are pure contradictions, just as are all Marxist words and terminology. Remember, none of this is spontaneous. It is literally being directed word for word by those with an agenda that is indeed literally sinister, meaning on the left. Anyone who's teaching these concepts to young children is no different than those who would physically rape them or cut off their genitals. Can you imagine your kids having to memorize such wacko definitions of make-believe non-existent abstractions? It's a form of mental torture. This is really beyond criminal. The insane are truly running the asylum, and one person who helped demonstrate that sad reality was none other than the giant-breasted male teacher teaching his classes in an Oakville, Ontario high school. And as I predicted from the very first day that story broke, it was a brilliant way to expose the mental dysfunction and unionized corruption within virtually all government-funded education systems. This is from the Toronto Sun, September 8th, written by Brian Lilly under the headline, "Carrie Lemieux has shown what a joke Ontario school system is." And I quote, "He spent a whole year dressed as a caricature of a woman, and the school system supported him instead of saying no. Carrie Lemieux has proven one thing. The emperor that is Ontario's education system has no clothes. The system is a joke, a self-parody, a stereotype of woke culture and all that is wrong with it. Last year, Carrie Lemieux showed up to classes at Oakville Trafalgar High School wearing ridiculously large prosthetic breasts, a blonde wig, and tiny bike shorts. The kids giggled in the class and in the hallways. Parents raised concerns, as did the Ministry of Education, but the board defended Lemieux and his ridiculous appearance. Now Lemieux is back in the classroom, this time at Hamilton's Nora Frances Henderson High School, and dressed as a man. He has been spotted wearing cargo shorts, a golf shirt, and even sporting a beard. Gone are the Z-cup fake breasts, gone is the wig and the tight bike shorts. The students are told to address him as Mr. Lemieux. Was Lemieux simply trying to punk the system last year? Was he trying to make a political point? Show how far the school system had gone? It certainly looks that way now as he smiles beneath his beard at the new school in Hamilton. As for his reasonings, there has been speculation that his motivation was an anti-woke agenda, while others have claimed the whole thing was in response to a dispute and disciplinary action from school administrators. Whatever the reasons, Lemieux may very well have punked us all, simply because no one in the education system had the sense to say no," end quote. Well, that's exactly what he did, and I was saying so at the time, especially after hearing from some of his students in class that those disciplinary actions that were just mentioned, they had something to do with Lemieux being accused of toxic masculinity. Get that. Yet another Marxist anti-concept. So we gave him toxic femininity, and they swallowed the poison.
First, we're starting in Britain because, well, in Canada, they don't actually interview Canadian citizens about things of interest to Canadians, and so we end up hearing about how Canada must do more for immigrants. So that's the kind of news we get in Canada. But in the United Kingdom, they call up people from Canada and say, "Do you want to come on the show and tell us what's really going on about this million-person march? I hear that's news." So they pick it up. So here is a United Kingdom television show talking to a Canadian person, one of the organizers of the march, I think out Vancouver way.
Canada has kind of crept into an authoritarian way of thinking.
I think so. I mean, Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party sort of has run amok with their own agenda and is not engaging the population in their thoughts or concerns. And this happened way back in 2016 when Trudeau's Liberal Party presented Bill C-16, which was Canada's gender identity legislation. A few of us tried to push back. We were completely ignored and railroaded with this legislation, which became further policies, including things like SOGI, which is the curriculum that teaches kids of all ages in public schools across Canada about gender identity ideology. It teaches kids that every kid has a gender identity. It instructs teachers to ask every student about their pronouns in the classroom. And again, parents don't have any say and often don't even have any knowledge. So kids at school, for example, will decide that, you know, now I'm a girl and now I want to be called Mary, and somewhere down the line, parents will find out and they haven't been informed, and it's quite dangerous.
It is. It's very, very dangerous what's going on. And it's even worse that unions are using time at work, time during the union time to plan counter protests. And then the plan is leaked. But after that meeting, which was attended by QP and OPSU and a whole bunch of other Ontario activist unions, the unions themselves came out publicly to articulate what was said in that meeting, which is there's no hate, there's no room for hate in Ontario, which is to say, if you oppose our SOGI initiative, if you oppose mutilating children, if you oppose cutting off healthy sex organs in order to facilitate aligning a body with a feeling, a mental health feeling, the disassociation of one's gender and all of that, gender dysphoria, et cetera, et cetera. If you think all of that is bad, that's hateful, according to them. So they've redefined hate and said, that's not welcome here, in order to be palatable to people, in order to sell it. But they're communists, and they said so very clearly during their meetings. Here's QP Ontario from yesterday, and it's got no space for hate. And QP Ontario has a whole big tweet talking about how they're going to counter-protest. OPSU is another one. Hate groups are organizing anti-alphabet soup rallies on September 20th. That's not true. That's not true. It's not anti-alphabet soup rallies. The rallies are to stop teaching this ideology in school. If you're gay or straight, that shouldn't matter when you're being taught the ABCs. It just should not. And so that's kind of generally what most parents agree with. And like, stay out of teaching our children about these tangential, almost religious things. Stop it. Stop it. Right. And even in Catholic schools, you can't go to Catholic school in Ontario anymore and expect to be given a Catholic education. You will be given SDGs and alphabet soup as the only sustenance, right? As the only thing to ingest for your mind, right? And that's antithetical, right? It's unbelievable. It is not Catholic. These ideologies are diametrically opposed. They don't line up, not even one little tiny bit. I don't think I finished the whole OPSU tweet, so I'm going to reread the OPSU tweet. It says, hate groups are organizing against anti-alphabet soup rallies on September 20th, and we're coming together to say enough is enough. Stand up against hate. Find a local counter demo or organize your own. And then they've got a link to help people organize, which is, again, not surprising. They talked about that during the meeting, right? Here is the BC Federation of Labor, and they say, in the face of hate, BC's labor movement stands in solidarity with trans people. Our statement on the anti-trans rallies planned for Wednesday, September 20th. And so they've got a statement there as well. And the funny thing is, it's not anti-trans. It's not anti-trans people. It's not anti-LGBT ramalamadignog. It's not any of that stuff. It is anti having an ideology taught as fact, which is not fact, in schools. That's what this fundamentally is. It's a peaceful protest. But you know what else was a peaceful protest? The trucker protest. It was legal, according to a judge, because of the honking injunction. Continue your legal protest. All of those things were true, and they slammed the Emergencies Act down anyway. I hope I'm wrong in my prediction that they're going to try and frame these people as committing some kind of hate crime, as terrorists, just like they framed the truckers, just like they framed Adam Skelly, just like they framed anybody who stands up against this and gets a big turnout, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, Sheila, I'll tell you, and I'm not exaggerating, when we went to the counter-protest with the whole Spirit Unicorn community, honestly, the way they present themselves, it was like if Arkham Asylum was real, this was a jailbreak, okay? I mean, if somebody walked by wearing a green suit with black question marks all over it, I wouldn't have batted an eyelash. So there's Joker, there's Poison Ivy, there's Clayface. And these people, I'm sorry to say this, I'm not trying to be funny and I'm not trying to be mean. My spidey senses in terms of mental illness were tingling greatly. These are people in need of psychiatric care. And, you know, typically when we do stories about trans individuals and I'm talking Jonathan and Eve, and I'm talking Ash Davis, and I'm talking Busty Lemieux. These are reprehensible people in dire need of a psychiatrist, and they should get mental health. Instead, somehow, society has been bent that we are literally allowing the lunatic fringe to set the narrative, and that to criticize these people, like I said, most of which I think are mentally ill, just to bring that up, you're the one who is the hater. You're the one who is mentally ill. You're the one that has to be sat down on a couch with a mental health professional and cured of your wrong thinking. It's absolutely astonishing how we got to this point. I'm not exaggerating at all when I say we are seeing Marxism in action. The teachers' unions and the school boards and the public sector unions, it's taken decades, but they have been infiltrated. I can't even call them progressives or far left. Yeah, I just feel, Sheila, this is Marxism 101 in action, i.e. attack the nuclear family. Secondly, tear down societal norms and rebuild society as a Marxist utopia, which never happens. Just go to Cuba or North Korea or Venezuela if you want the proverbial proof in the pudding. And this is what we're seeing. And I find it egregious and outrageous that publicly funded unions were doing everything they could in the last several days of this month, leading up to yesterday, to bang the war drums, come out and challenge hate. They keep using the word hate. They keep using the phrase, love Trump's hate. I'll tell you what I observed yesterday. First of all, we went to the counter demonstration. The counter protest took lease on the South Lawn of Queen's Park. And I would estimate about 600 meters away or so on the North Lawn, the Million March for Children demonstrators, that's where they stayed. And there was no interaction at first. But after about an hour of ranting and raving, counter demonstrators, first it was drips and drabs, and then it was a few thousand, came to the North Lawn, and they're entitled to do that. But you could tell they were using fear and intimidation tactics. They were completely encircling the protest, and they were chanting all kinds of vulgar phrases. They were, you know, as the saying goes, wearing trouble on their shirts. And I'll tell you one thing, Sheila, if it hadn't been for the Toronto Police Service, their rank and file, of setting up a perimeter with their bicycles, sort of a temporary fence, those LGBTers were going to keep going closer and it would be like a vice coming in. And inevitably, they were looking for a physical confrontation. I am completely certain of that.
Sure they were.
You know, and thankfully, none of the demonstrators, that's the Million March for Children demonstrators, none of them took the bait. None of them threw a haymaker. And good on the Toronto Police Service for keeping order that day.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And to hear David Menzies so clearly recognize that what we are witnessing is Marxism in action was right on the money, including the violence. And by the way, the picture accompanying this week's show online was captured from a counter-protest in Vancouver, where Dan Dix was covering the event. Talk about Darth Vader. No one should be allowed in public dressed like that. Now, I don't have much to add to what we just heard from Canada Pauly and from David Menzies, but I have a lot to say about what we'll be hearing next, taken from the Ottawa protests.
I want to introduce to you a man, a young man who needs no introduction amongst this crowd. He's a hero. He, as a 17-year-old, he stood up to the Catholic school board. Doesn't sound very Catholic anymore. To defend the girls in his school in Renfrew, Ontario. Thank you. He organized the walkout. He was arrested and then expelled from his school and prevented from completing grade 11. He was then arrested again by police. when he was freely protesting at a transgender book reading at a local library. He is part of Save Canada, and he's standing up for Canadian and Christian values across this great land. Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Alexander.
Thank you. Thank you. I remember last November when I first got kicked out of school. I had left the public board. I went to the Catholic board, and I got kicked out of school. They told me that I was a threat to the students. I wasn't allowed to attend class. Anybody who was seen associating with me in my demonstration would be banned from transportation to school, and that they wouldn't be allowed on certain sports teams, apparently. And they weren't given any student in good standing. So I ended up having almost 200 counter protesters come out to protest against me at my own high school. And I remember I felt like we had an issue, because there was probably 800 or 900 students in that building and not one parent would say anything. Now we've had parents come forward, and now look at this right here. Look at that. As a young person, I look out and I look to the leaders who are supposed to be the politicians, the ones that are supposed to represent us. And today, guess what? We had Jagmeet Singh walk up to me, start mouthing words at me. He made hand gestures at me, insulting me. And then on the West Block, we have Polyev hiding. He with his finger in the air, trying to decide whether it's good. Where's Polyev? Where are you, Pierre? We need to stop putting our faith in politicians. I think we've learned today that the people hold the power. Right now, we've got it. A lot of people are going to say, yeah, we got to get Trudeau out and we got to vote strategically and all that. At the end of the day, I do not care about the politics. It's about the people. We're winning. Stop putting your faith in spineless cowards. The politicians are pathetic. Today, we showed them who has the power. Today, we're winning. The people are uniting. And it's time that we put an end to what's happening in the education system and in the whole world in general. I mean, why is our prime minister flaunting a banner of sodomy every single day? We need to end this, and we need to put our faith in God, and that's the only way we will ever save Canada. So thank you all for coming out. Hands off our kids!
Thank you, Josh. And Josh mentions politicians, and I would like to make note of one politician who did come out today. He's an old friend of mine when I worked on the Hill. He was a damn good cabinet minister in the Stephen Harper government. He's a damn good man who stands for principles, and Maxime Bernier is right over here. So, Maxine and I both love Ayn Rand, and especially Atlas Shrugged. You know what? Today, I think Atlas is shrugging.
Stu Peter said to me on the show, he's not in favor of our countries, our Christian countries, bringing a lot of people of different faiths coming into our country. I mean, he's speaking of the United States of America. North America in general has taken in legal immigrants, has welcomed them in. They do not believe in our same religious convictions necessarily. There's fundamental, huge differences between the Muslims, the Christians, the Jews, the Sikhs, the Buddhists, the atheists. There's huge differences. But I have to say something. There's a lot of differences between our Christian denominations as well. And our Christian denominations, which we used to think of the United Church as a Bible-believing group, a little bit, always a bit liberal, but now fully ordaining homosexual priests, probably transgenders, fully embracing all of that. That's our Christian siding religions. So all I have to say at this point is that we've come to a very interesting point in our country where strong voice is coming from Muslim leaders. And let me tell you, I appreciate the strong voices and I appreciate strength in unity to fight this because I think we're going to need it. And it's not over by a long shot, but I believe that we did something in the spirit realm. It was like the Philistines, the Amalekites, the Israelites, and the Budlites were at war. And we fought the good fight. I personally had a blast.
I totally agree that the folks opposing the labor movement's Marxist agenda certainly scored a major step in the right direction, and that was fun to watch. But I also had some misgivings about this new alliance forming around the gender issue, and some of my concerns were just addressed by Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. Clearly, she sees the danger of division within this emerging alliance. And we saw signs of this issue surfacing during the Million People protest. Consider that we just heard Josh Alexander proclaim that the only way we will ever save Canada is putting our faith in God. I don't care about politics, he says. Meanwhile, right there in the crowd stands Maxime Bernier, a politician offering a political solution, and who was introduced as a fan of Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged. And wasn't it Ayn Rand who warned against the coming together of faith and force as the destroyers of the modern world? The danger with all of the religious arguments and solutions being suggested on the grounds of any religious belief is that they speak in approximations. Putting our faith in God is precisely one such approximation. That could mean anything, given the numerous religions based on a deity, and who knows what it might mean to those who profess no deity. But this political conflict is not about religion at all, even though it affects those areas of life. The issue is a struggle between tyranny and freedom, two social conditions that affect every walk of life, every breath you take, every action you take, every thought you're able to express. Last week, I observed that the left in this trans debate was under the assumption that the March for Children was all about them. But this week, as we've now learned from various voices in the protest, many on the right side of this debate are also operating under an assumption that this is about them. Laura Lynn celebrates the fact that we're now at a point where there are strong voices from Muslim leaders. Yes, but why now and not earlier? The Muslim community has expressed its opposition to the trans agenda as being an attack on their religion, arguing that they are being forced to incorporate trans values into Islamic ideology and belief. And on this point, they're entirely correct. The Christian community says that the trans agenda is offensive to their core beliefs and values and is an attack on those core beliefs and values. And on this point, they are also correct. So I noted with some alarm that many of the religious voices who openly welcome the unity of so many differing religious and philosophical groups, citing Christians, Muslims, agnostics, Buddhists, atheists, and any subcategories of these groupings, go on to proclaim loudly that the only solution to the gender crisis or some other dystopian feature of tyranny is to, for example, embrace an Abrahamic God or the teachings of Jesus or of Muhammad. So where does that leave the Buddhists, atheists, agnostics, and others who don't see themselves in those groups? Therein lies the Achilles heel of this new alliance that was concerning Laura Lynn. Leave our kids alone isn't going to cut it outside of the realm of that singular issue, but it does point us in the right direction on what the true commonality between all these differing beliefs and lifestyles are. Unlike the alphabet soup community, which does not exist as any kind of definable community with shared values, the Muslim and Christian communities are indeed real communities professing shared values within each community. Atheists, on the other hand, are not a community nor a constituency. The belief that the tyranny of communist China or the tyranny of the Soviet Union were a consequence of atheism is a myth. The official atheism that arises in tyrannies is a consequence of the tyranny, not the other way around. Tyrannical rulers accept no other moral authorities, whether they are religious or not. Christians or Muslims or atheists are far from possessing any particular monopoly on morality. The fundamental principle of social morality, that is, of morality between individuals, is the principle of consent. I don't have to be either a person of faith or an atheist to be able to accept that principle. And it is within that principle, when shared by others, that a true commonality of values arises between all of these otherwise very differing lifestyles and personal choices. And by the nature of their being, children are unable to consent, which again defines a common recognition of reality among those who understand why this is so. But where is the universal sentiment among these groups when it comes to climate change propaganda, or the vaccine propaganda, or Canada's unconscionable proxy Ukrainian war against Russia, which is killing more children and young people than the irrational non-binary movement has been able to accumulate so far? Freedom is for the other, not for the self. Individual freedom is a collective concept, believe it or not. A group concept, not to be confused with collectivism or with fictional group rights. The condition that we refer to as freedom is that social condition predicated on the principle that each and every individual within the group has a free will along with the right to exercise it, and that each individual's social relationship to other individuals is based on the principle of consent. When that principle has been violated, only then does any government or system of justice have the duty to intervene. This is no mere article of faith. To the degree that any society has implemented these principles, that society has prospered and enjoyed the greatest degree of happiness within its populations. To the degree that society has abandoned those principles, misery and poverty abound. Now, like it or not, and I don't like it any more than most of you do, the only long-term solution to the tyranny confronting us is a political one. It took me a long time to come to accept that most people attracted to politics today are on the left. The reason that most people on the true right hate politics so much is because virtually all of the politics today is the politics of the left, to the point that even the binary of left and right has been defined by the left, with a fake political spectrum that put the tyrannical options of communism and socialism on the left and the tyrannical option of fascism on the right, thereby having eliminated any freedom option from the political spectrum entirely. This is what I've been calling the broken political compass, because anything called a political spectrum lacks any polarity at all. It is unipolar. Left on the left and left on the right and left in the imaginary center. Those on the right have been tricked into running away from their own identity. You know, I'm not a fascist. Freedom and truth are exclusive to the political polarity of the right. So unable to see that polarity, many on the right are lost. They seek political freedom through non-political means, like arguing that the real problem is a spiritual one, which is entirely true, but it's not a solution in the physical political realm within which we exercise our spirituality. We are now at the political tipping point. And the question is, will it be ballots or bullets? And there's an uncomfortable binary for you. Also kind of like the binary choice faced by all of us each and every week when it's time for us to make a choice that's just right by getting together again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
First grade, buttons and bows. Second grade, pilgrims. Third grade, flowers and feathers.
That's us, flowers and feathers.
I played a tiger last year, and it was awful hot inside that tiger suit.
It'd be hotter inside of a real tiger.
What part do you think they'll give you, Beaver?
Well, I don't know. Once in the first grade, I played the wolf in Little Red Riding Hood.
You were terrible.
You forgot all your lines.
I did not. I growled every time I was supposed to.
Sure. I just hope it's not one of those mushy plays where they got kissing.
You're not allowed to have kissing till the seventh grade.
There's nobody in this whole school you could pay me to kiss. Well,